Rajesh, welcome to our first podcast at Seamless Dubai 2024. So I have to be careful not to mix it up, because we started 2 years ago with the podcast recording. So we're recording some 22, 23. Now 24, first one here, first day at Seamless Dubai, first one receiving our book. So we're going to talk about the book learnings in a minute. But please introduce yourself to the audience and what your company is doing.
Thanks, Alex. And thanks, Lena, as well. Thanks for this wonderful opportunity and, for this really wonderful day at Seamless. So I'm Rajesh Chandra Mohan. I'm the CIO, Chief Information Officer for the Ghazanabad Group. So the group has got interests and businesses in automotive, healthcare, logistics, retail, food, and we also are getting into other areas as well. So coming into retail, we do have a business unit called Grandia Supermarkets. We are currently about 42 and we're trying to expand to about 50 by the end of this year. We also have two B2B platforms. One is called Buyparts. The other one is called Buygrow. These are completely online and B2B. And Buygrow is bridging the gap between the wholesale and retailers. So we bridge the gap and we kind of replenish between the wholesalers and retailers. This is small outlets within Dubai and UAE. Buyparts is another platform where we sell aftermarket and genuine spare parts for automobiles. And this is again between the distributor and the retail garages. So these are the two B2B businesses we have. Apart from that, in automotive, we do deal with re-export of cars and spare parts, which is quite some good business there. And we are also into healthcare and pharmacy as well.
Yeah. When I visited your company pages, I said, okay, you're doing it all. So there's like barely an industry you're leaving out. But just for the listeners, where many of them are like in Europe, though, numbers wise. So how many employees, like turnover, GMV? I don't know even how to measure it in the different distinctions, but how would you describe it?
Yeah. It's quite a large organization. We are quite exponentially growing at this point in time. The organization is about 39, 40 years old. Started out with automotive in UAE and then expanded into other regions as well. So we have also grown in terms of employee size. So currently we are about 3,000 employees. That includes all the supermarkets and all our automotive and B2B businesses as well. What is also really good for us is that we have two joint ventures with the Abu Dhabi Ports Group. One is for the food hub and the other is for the auto hub. So obviously over a period of time, probably in the next 2-3 years, we'll grow much bigger.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so main businesses are still then automotive. Is this important for more than like 50% of the revenue, or where does it stand?
Yeah. So you could say there's a good split between automotive, which is cars, spare parts, and retail and food. Okay. So that's a 50-50 split if you want to look at it that way.
And I'm assuming, no problem. So I'm assuming from a CIO perspective, like managing so many different, business models and organizations, that's not simple, because sometimes we have people here only responsible for one retail business model. And even that, only on the supermarket side, it's super hard to solve. Do you want to be from store only? Do you want to run a warehouse? Do you want to do quick commerce? But you're running like different tech platforms for different business models. So tell us how you manage this stuff.
Yeah. At the outset, it's very challenging. You spelled it out. I've spent about 25 years in retail, and we all know how diverse it is, how complex it is, the margins being very low. It ranges from a great customer experience to, you know, employee productivity and whatnot. So retail is a different ballgame as well. But when you look at automotive, that's again different, because now you're dealing with, cars, you're dealing with spare parts, and you're dealing with a different set of customers. When you move on to healthcare, again, the regulations, the local laws, everything is different. So the way I try to manage it is that you need to have subject matter experts in your team. You need to learn more about the business. So when I joined Ghazan Abood about 18 months back, the first thing for me was to understand the businesses. So I spent a lot of time with the CEOs, understanding what their business is, what their pain points are. And it's not a one size fits all. You would need horses for courses. So probably you need a kind of a super CPU, super computer for retail and automotive. But when it comes to smaller platforms, and this is where my challenge really lies. On one hand, you have large businesses. You also have startups who have a different DNA, who have a different culture, which means that for an automotive or retail, you could take some time and deploy something over the weekend. They could wait for that. But in a startup, they just want it the next minute or the next second. So you need to switch gears. You need to equip yourself with the understanding of the business. You also need to look at technology which is cost effective. So when I look at a startup, I might go with a technology like Zoho, which is easily adaptable. I can't tell a startup that now come on, implement Salesforce. It's not going to work for them. But for a larger business, probably Salesforce is the solution, or SAP could be a solution. But you need to look at a lot of open source as well. So you need to have this wide breadth of technology. You need to be flexible. You need to be adaptable. And that's the game.
Wow. So do you sleep? You know, it's like 24/7 basically, right? Yeah. You know, the supermarkets never stop, you know, an automotive. And I would like to just like dig deeper into starting, you know, so from the supermarket to actually the B2B platform that you run. So recently I had to change probably half of my car parts, half of it. And as surprising as it is, I would say in a supermarket here, we can get everything within 15 to 30 minutes in Dubai, right? And we are very, very used to it. When it came to the specifically car parts, I drive Audi Q5. I mean, just to find the platform, like on Google, became like a challenge of the year, to be honest. Secondly, when you probably know better than I, going to all the, like, because you're clearly serving a lot of little shops here, because this is what the economy is built on. These guys also don't know, and you don't really, as a consumer, you don't really trust. So, and here you are, you know, like actually tapping into that B2B parts market. So maybe you can elaborate more about what is the go-to-market strategy? Like, how do these shops, you know, which are all over Dubai, find out about you? And why aren't they not using you? Or are they using you? Because from consumer side, when I push them onto the B2B, I said, surely there has to be a B2B platform where you can check the parts. I would say majority were very confused and they were still not in a digital 101 age. So exactly. what's your go-to-market strategy on that B2B?
Yeah. So the first thing is you could build a good technology, you could build an app, but what is important is for the customers and the end user, right? So the main challenge, as you had spelled it out, is to reach out to these garages, reach out to these retail outlets. They have a very traditional way of working, which means that today they use WhatsApp, and most of the pictures, most of their parts, or even if you look at the retail products, it's all happening on WhatsApp. The customers, their own customers are on WhatsApp. So it's a very challenging environment where you have to go to them and say, hey, there is an app. Why don't you install it on your phone? And then the next time you require a part, why don't you use our app? So what we did was initially we'll have to push it into the market. So we have a sales force who visits the retailers, who visits the garages, has that rapport with them, and over a period of time, you know, try to understand their pain points. We are not yet there completely, but then we have kind of made a dent into the market. So in some areas, in some retail outlets, in some garages, our app is being used. I particularly had a challenge when I came on board. I found the app to be not very responsive. It's been built very quickly. And this is what happens when you try to accelerate and go to the market much before you're ready. So you need to be ready from a tech perspective as well. It's like you're driving your Audi at 100 miles an hour and you want to change tires. So, and you don't have time to do that. So it's a pit stop. So given that challenge, it became extremely important for me to identify the resources, identify bottlenecks, clean out the app, do a lot of researching to see how this entire app and the ecosystem can be really, really it came with a bunch of bugs as well. So,
but what I'm hearing is that you are pushing into the education as well, right? Like, because for me, I think that's what's lacking in the UAE at market at the moment. The B2B, we're launching the platforms, and as you said, first of all, we're launching with a lot of bugs, and secondly, we kind of just let it be, you know. So then adoption is not there, and it's a big. If you compare it to the Western markets, you know, it's a big. I think it's a big issue here that the adoption is not there because the B2B players focusing maybe too much on the tech rather than how the B2B little outlets will adopt it.
Yeah.
So do you find
it's a matter of, so when you look at it, let's take the tech out of it for some time. If you really look at why somebody has to use the app, it should be convenience. It should be necessity. Otherwise, nobody is going to do it. Nobody is going to do it for the heck of it, right? So if they see certain unique products, which are cost effective, competitive, and really selling in the market, and our app is pushing that, probably they'll come to that. And that's some of the retailers have gone to that route as well. I don't want to name them, but you know, they have a brick and mortar store, and I don't know if they have an app or not, but they've tried to bring products from Eastern Europe, and it sells very well. So you need to differentiate in terms of your products. Cost cannot be your differentiator at all. Although at some point in time for market penetration, you need to get there. But the moment you have the differentiation, you have a better customer experience, your replenishment model is, your supply chain is not broken and it is continuous, it gives a bit of a growth. But again, it's a very, very challenging environment because you still have distributors going and selling to the retail shops. So here, what you're trying to do is you're trying to disrupt the market. One of the other ways of doing it is that in your app, since you get large number of orders or quite some of products and orders, you can do a lot of analytics. You can start understanding customer behavior. You can start understanding the product behavior. And then when you feed back this information to the retail outlets and the distributors, I think then that's when the whole thing will start playing out.
Wow. Well, a bit of a pitch then for you, for anyone that is still not using your B2B platform, they should do, because a consumer like me will probably, I would definitely not be price driven, you know, but for me, it was completely like not availability, not clarity. No one knows anything. So yeah. I think definitely is an opportunity to push.
But there, I would have like a very technical question. So we are building a couple of spare parts marketplaces in different regions of the world. And what we are seeing is you have obviously OEM parts, but then you have like non-OEM parts. And just the mapping in different cars or trucks or buses is so hard to do that that it's the only reason why some shops are only relying on specific brands, because they don't know how to map a specific compressor into the Audi. They just don't know if this works. So suddenly the mapping function on its own becomes a differentiator. If you know this part may be from Eastern Europe or from India or from Pakistan for only $10 would work in Lina's car, and you can sell it to her, so that's really a differentiator. So and not just the access to the parts, just like the knowledge is not there. And obviously the car shop, they cannot afford like building in like 2, 3, 4 different compressors or pumps or whatever. So in the projects we are active, obviously sometimes you can use like platforms like Autodoc and some others, but there is no global mapping system. Usually you go back to step one, going maybe to India or to Brazil or to China, and let people manually map, tell, okay, these compressors are working, or like the specifications are similar to Volkswagen Group ABC. You map it in the database and eventually it shows up in your app. So hard work, but it's like their data is like the differentiator. Is it the same with like your business, or are you differentiating on another way?
So you have explained it in a very nice way, and you have also said it's a very difficult problem to solve. In a way, we also face a similar problem. But what we have done is there are some alliances, groups of manufacturers who have got together, and they've kind of built their catalog. So what we do is we try and tap into that. So when you start tapping into that, the mapping is already existing. So we have certain APIs which can go and fetch the data from their systems, and that's how we are currently handling it. But it's a nice thought, a good thought to explore and see how we can bring all of this together.
But so we are here at a conference where like many vendors would approach you and say, Rajesh, I have like the best AI powered PIM solution for the car industry. You should use it, say, 40% of your time. And you're in the business for a bit longer now, and not only in the automotive industry, but also like in retail and healthcare. And but every vendor here would like to pitch you, saying he can solve exactly the problem you're naming. Doesn't matter what it is. So what is your experience there? So how much of the work you're doing with your tech team really can be done by vendors, features and functions that are like already pre-built, and how much is still manual? And how is this changing over time? Is it becoming easier or harder, depending on the vendor, obviously, you're using? It's a tough question, I know, but like you're addressing the vendors here now.
So let me share a secret. So whenever I speak to a vendor, I ask him, are you from marketing or from sales or from pre-sales? Because they have a very perfect pitch, which will tell you that, yes, I can solve your problem. And we have already solved this problem in a million ways. And these are a set of customers who have already solved their problem. So of course, see, they are doing their job in terms of selling, and that's what they're for. And as a consumer of technology, and I've been in this space for about 25, 30 years, what I've realized is you do not get what you hear. And that's period. So whether you look at best of breed technology, even today, Oracle, SAP, Salesforce, you name it, the marketing pitch will be super great. But when you try and implement it, you will have millions of hurdles. And that's where it is. So what I do is I'm candid and upfront. I tell them, please keep your marketing pitch aside. Tell me what your product really does. And then I have this window of opportunity where I can evaluate them. But what happens in reality is that you will do your evaluation. You may do client references. You may do a demo of their product. I have a vendor, I have a supplier or a software vendor who's sitting in US. They have implemented an assortment planning solution for an Eastern European organization. They're not prevalent in the market. They're a startup. So, and they came across and said, this is our technology. Would you really want to use it? So I said, I mean, let me evaluate. Let me see how good your technology is. So we had to do a demo. We had to upload some data, churn the data, get the assortment engine running, get an output and see. But more often than not, what really happens is when the rubber hits the road, you will have a million challenges. And that's where I find it difficult to keep my job, because if any of this evaluation fails, and the organization invests time, energy, effort, and it really doesn't work, that's where you're on a very difficult spot. And it's very difficult to, especially in the Middle East, the room for error, there is no margin for error. There is no, you might call it machine learning, there is no human learning. You have to get it right the first time. So that's where my challenge lies. And touch wood, I have been successful in terms of making this happen. And sometimes you would be kind of forced to use your internal teams. I have a bunch of developers. I have a bunch of people who will, you know, give their heart and soul for making things happen. But when it comes to technology partners, they're quite different, because again, they also have cost pressures. They also have different technologies. So some technologies are in-house, like open source, MERN, some of it are in-house. Some of it is outsourced. But then there is a challenge of cost as well. So these are the challenges. So net-net, the onus is on the, I would term Ghazanabod as a captive industry where we adopt technology for using it in the business and the business has to do a return on investment. So being a captive, it's hard, but you have to be selective and you have to be prudent.
So from B2B to vendors to let's switch to the next big topic, grocery. And I think as we will discuss on a number of panels today, this market, when it comes to grocery, is cutthroat, right? So who can do better price, who is faster, who is closer, who can throw you a better promotion at the right time, how many WhatsApps and everything you get left, right, and center. But here you are, guys. Grandiose is, I'm a big fan. It's definitely, I can see you guys are expanding and expanding very, very fast. So maybe you can elaborate on the Grandiose supermarkets e-commerce strategy. Are you on aggregators? Do you have your own app? What sort of percentage of the maybe grocery business comes through online? Because I think that's an interesting.
That's a side question. Are you a customer?
I am a customer.
And why?
I think because of the fresh produce. So fresh produce and the very extensive non-alcoholic drinks range. I think you are leading the pack on that.
Fantastic. So talking about Grandiose, I think the most important thing is being a differentiator in the market. Because what you have said is that the consumers are hungry in terms of promotions, in terms of getting the best possible products at certain prices which they want. But as retailers, we have to maximize our profit. We have hordes of other problems as well. So the first thing is trying to differentiate in the market. So what we are trying to do is being a community center. So if you have walked into Grandiose, you would have seen a salon, you would have seen a nail bar, you would have seen a pharmacy, you would have seen all of it. In some places, we also have a fitness center. So what we're trying to do is build a community and also have a supermarket, but then we are not termed it as supermarket. We are calling it a store. So Grandiose in itself is a concept which is just starting out in other countries as well, where you will go into a you will walk into a community center. You will experience various products. It could be products, it could be services, like what I said, fitness or salon or nail bar or pharmacy.
They actually have a bar in the middle of a store.
Exactly. Zero bar. Yeah. So it's a zero calorie bar. So you could have your drinks and whatnot and then, you know, not put on weight. So we also have that. We have a very good bakery. We also have our own manufacturing unit, which we recently acquired, and our USP is, you know, to provide the best bakery products. And trust me, if you walk into the store and have a croissant, it is amazing. And I have feedback from my neighbors that they would love to have Grandiose cakes. So the bakery is awesome. The store looks fantastic. In the middle, you have a fine dining where you can pick up stuff, spend an evening with your family. And if somebody in your family needs a shawarma or a Pepsi or a coffee, you can all have it there in the same location. So it's an amazing customer experience which we want to bring in. So we want to differentiate. We want to create a niche for ourselves. And of course, there are challenges on the way. Some stores, probably we need to get our assortment right and all of that.
Okay, I believe the assortment pitch and like that Lena likes it to shop there. That's like should be proof enough for most of the listeners to go there. But let's dive a bit deeper here into the delivery side of the business. Last week at the OMR conference in Hamburg, I recorded a podcast with the MD of Picnic Germany. So Picnic, I don't know if you're aware of the delivery app, is kind of the only delivery service that is able to earn money. just on the product delivery itself. So just by the product margin, not selling advertisement, not selling other services. They are about to do 700 million euros in revenues this year in Germany, alone. In the Netherlands, they own already, 10% roughly of the grocery market share, a delivery service. So they don't have any supermarkets where, at the same time, the fast delivery services, Gorilla, Skittier, Flink, do have a very hard time, to earn money. And I know we had this as a topic last year also here, with different, speakers from the grocery industry. And there was, it was not clear last time when we spoke here in Dubai. So where will this go? There was like a tendency of like delivering from store, which is already outdated in German markets, because delivery from specialized warehouses is a bit more efficient. What's your view here? Is there a future for these kind of services in Dubai? Is there actually demand from the customer side, or would you focus on the on-site experience, the store experience?
Yeah, so we spoke about the store, basically the brick and mortar store. But when you come to e-commerce and the digital side of it, it's definitely picked up a lot. And of course, there was a spike during the COVID times. Now things are returning back to normalcy. But then there is this customer who also wants to go onto a grocery app and buy. So today you have the likes of Talabat or Kareem or these kind of providers who give you food, who give you a Talabat store where you can do your retail shopping. So they have such an app, which is also picking up. They also have a delivery service, which they do. So the aggregators, are present in the market. So that's one of the trends which has really caught up.
So they're picking also a merchandise from your store.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. So we are well and truly omnichannel. So we have our own Grandiose app. So you could go onto the Grandiose app and you could order whatever you want. You could even order flowers. We also have a flower section. It's called Grand Rose. So if you look at the app, it's not yet a super app, but then the way the UI UX has been done is that you would find food, you would find grocery, you would find Food Avenue where you can order pizzas, Grandiose pizzas, then you could order Burger Bliss, you could order flowers, which is Grand Rose. That's how the app is built. It's all falling to a single shopping cart. And then we also have our own delivery app and delivery fleet, which we use to distribute to our customers. So we have our own e-commerce ecosystem. We also have delivery aggregators. So we have tied up with 4 or 5 aggregators in the market, and we pick from the store and deliver. We also have a WhatsApp group or a WhatsApp, where business WhatsApp, where our customers just come in and say, I'm next door, I need a can of Pepsi or a can of water or whatever, and then we kind of deliver. We also have a call center where customers call up and, say that I've ordered on the app and I need to add some more things to that. So we are well and truly omnichannel. And I must say, our app over the last 8-9 months has been, it's become lightning fast thanks to my team and a few of our technology partners and few technology which we adopted. We have grown exponentially. So the number of orders per day have grown literally by about 10 times. And you are actually lower down when you compared yourself with the delivery aggregators. But then we are like number one, number two now. So almost number two. So we are picking up and we are growing absolutely very fast.
So that's impressive. So you're doing it all. The question now is, because I'm following this market now for 3 or 4 years in the Central Europe, the ones that try to do it all said are complaining that it's hard to earn money. And I guess the family-owned business you're in, as you're saying, there's no margin of error in this market. You're also doomed to earn money on that. And if I'm listening to this omnichannel experience, so you can even use a call center calling in to add stuff to your cart. Sounds nice, but super expensive process, right? So you need a backend that where people could like do the external cart maintenance, people picking up the phone, identifying is it actually the one who's calling. This alone is hard to do. Like, is a caller actually really the owner of the cart, the identification process? So do you earn money with the e-commerce operations on the store?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about others retailers as well. But you know more than me. But see, so B2B and B2C businesses are tricky. It's not easy. And you need to stay invested in the game. And if you don't, so it's like this. If you just run a brick and mortar store, and if you don't get into e-commerce or digital, there's somebody else who's going to take the place. There are players like Amazon and Noon who don't have brick and mortar stores, but still they just survive on e-commerce. So there is a market for it. And if you're not there, you're going to lose out. But as you said, at this moment, we are kind of in an investment mode. We want to make sure we give the best of customer experience. We differentiate in the market. We also have a lot of services which we want to deliver. And I'm sure once you do all of it, you will make some money at the end.
All right. So maybe going from e-commerce to another big topic in grocery, you know, it's the AI. So the few of my personal UK clients, we are actually looking a lot into overall merchandising when it comes to AI and basically use of digital technology and AI in optimizing the assortment. So you are the CIO. So I guess you saw all the hundreds and thousands of demos in the last 12 months. So maybe you can elaborate more about in the supermarkets online, how are you adopting AI? And if so, you know, is there any success stories so far, like optimizing assortment, operations or customer service? You know, like you hear like people firing all the customer service agents, saving a lot of money because of the use of AI.
And just adding here, yesterday, a friend of mine posted a LinkedIn post where he was quoting from the BP yearly report, the oil company, saying they let go 50% of external agencies because the internal team became so much more productive that they don't need this anymore. So they can do like this double the stuff, triple the stuff, like with the same amount of people, which was surprising to me. I wasn't aware that this is so far ahead, but same here. All the vendors now from last year would come this year to you and say, yeah, we've now AI added to our stuff. It's even better now. So we can still solve it, but now better and cheaper. So yeah, what has AI changed for you?
Life has not changed that much, I would say. So I'm a retailer at heart. So what do retailers do? They buy and sell products. That's pretty much there. But when you look deep down and start looking at AI, ML, and you know, all these kind of technologies, it's the means to an end. So at the end of it, you want to provide excellent customer service. You want to increase store productivity. You want to reduce wastage, pilferage. I think in this day and age, AI has really, really, you know, come to an extent where it will really help us to do certain things. It is making inroads. And especially on, you know, things like assortment, optimization, shelf efficiency. So today you could have technology which could capture the video images of a shelf and then tell you what needs to be ordered and what's your sales forecast and based on what assortment you have, what is your shelf efficiency and all of it. So these technologies are coming about, but I still feel it's about 10-20% there. Still a lot has to be harnessed. So it's like pure science and applied science. So today AI, ML, IoT, all of that is in pure science stage. It's just come out of research is what I believe. And retailers are adopting it, but it would take some time for that to evolve. So for that to practically evolve and for me to tell that I have to, you know, let go of the customer service agents and I'm going to use an IVR to attend to my customers. I personally wouldn't want to be a customer talking to a non-human. And then I have this wonderful scripting which I can do with the bot, which could keep asking me the same questions again and again. So I don't think technology has reached a point where it will replace human beings in certain areas. Probably the speed of computation can be faster. So instead of somebody sitting down and doing assortments for, so
you would have a bunch of, say, 100 people trying to do assortment for 40,000 products. But probably AI or the assortment engine can reduce that, reduce the time taken for processing, and then give you 95% of the accuracy. And then you still have to have a human being look at it and say, yeah, this is the right set of products which I need in the store. So net, I think it's early stages. The adoption is still there. The other thing I would like to point out is the self-service checkout. Okay. So majority of the retailers have it here, but what is the adoption? Probably about 10% is the max adoption you will get. But if you speak to a partner and supplier and say, you'll say, no, it's like 30-40% you could. So imagine 100 customers walking and 40 of them using self-service. I don't think so. So there are nuances in the market. Probably if I pick a couple of items and I don't want to stand in the checkout counter, I would probably use self-service. And again, I need to do a card payment, and you have different payment methodologies. And the wonderful thing about self-service is that if this bottle of water is security tagged, then I still need to go to the cashier. So there is a bit of enhancement of technology which is required, which I'm sure will come in the coming years. It will get there, but then the adoption rate also will increase over a period of time.
So Rajesh, before I go to my final question, I think good that this episode will play after Seamless. Otherwise, during the Seamless, you will be attacked with evidence of how they are changing. They're changing the world of AI, eh? Okay, so my final question before I hand my mic to Alex is, so as the Hassan Abood Group, you guys are expanding, investing, and family is doing a wonderful things for the country itself, right? You have great partnerships. So for our listeners that are looking to maybe enter the Middle East in general, or the UAE, let's say, can they partner with your group? If not, you know, what sort of advice would you give them, you know, in terms of maybe localization? What's important to know when you actually, whether you are a vendor or whether you are a retailer or a potential next B2B player that really wants to succeed in the Middle East? You've been here a long time, so should be good advice.
Yeah, it's my 11th year in the Middle East. So I've been around in Saudi Arabia and in Qatar as well. So I would say loads and loads of opportunities. As a group, we are growing. We are looking at emerging technologies. We are looking at technologies which would give a good return on investment. And as I said earlier, there are businesses where you could invest a lot. There are businesses where you would also take the risk and try out some new products. So we are open to those kind of opportunities where we can definitely partner. So that is definitely there on the technology side of things. Coming to this market, if you talk about the UAE market, and this is my personal opinion, it's saturated. So people have done lots of things. They've done retail, they've done car spare parts, they've done fitness centers. They've done a lot of things. So the businesses which had to start here they are there. You name it and they are there. The McDonald's are here, the KFCs are here, almost all the franchises abroad which are present in Dubai. My personal advice would be find a niche, find a gap in the market where the consumers or the customers would look for value. And if there is some sort of a gap in the market which you could fill, and if it would be niche, which means that you're not cutting your prices and you're not reducing your margins to get in, I think that would possibly work. I can't give you the businesses which you can get into, but then I would say niche, differentiator in the market, and stay invested.
Okay, then maybe because we are offered this room by the Seamless Conference and you're now in the market for 10 years. So what is your rating of Seamless? Do you really find new stuff that inspires Europe? So you're coming here now for the third year or fourth year. I don't know when Seamless started, like 20 years ago, I believe in Dubai. And we believe it's like the biggest and leading conference in the digital and commerce area. So what's your impression so far?
Yeah, it's been really fantastic. There are a lot of partners who have been reaching out to me and saying that, you know, we are going to be in Seamless, so please come across and talk to us. So there are existing partners who have already reached out to us, which means that anybody and everybody is going to be in Seamless, and they are there. The top vendors are here, the suppliers are here, the startups are here. So everybody is there, and I'm also looking forward to meet a set of startups or tech partners whom I can work with. But would be interesting to see if there's anything really, really different. People are talking about AI, they talk about machine learning, analytics, IoT. But then as a consumer of tech, I need to see something very tangible. So one of the examples I can give you is that we talk a lot about food security, wastage in the Middle East. So I would wonder if somebody has come up with a technology which is end-to-end. So I don't want a vendor to come and give me an IoT sensor. That's not going to work for me. So you need to connect that IoT sensor and you need to take those signals. You need to pass it through an engine and then give me data and information which is useful to me. So one of the things which I'm looking, examples of what I'm looking for, is that if you could have a smart refrigerator which could possibly have sensors in it, and then it could connect with your e-commerce system, which then could look at your customers, and if you have registered, possibly place orders on behalf of your customer. This is end-to-end. I don't know if such a thing exists, but
actually refrigerator or even like a storage space showing you, okay, here are the products that are like about to become wasted would be nice. So yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, so a lot of research has been going on, and I've also looked at some research papers saying that you could basically have a scanner and it could scan certain products and then see what is ripening, what is the age. It would be nice to see that on the front of your refrigerator to see, or your storage space to see what is it, what. So one of the things I would tell you is like, one of my hobbies is cooking. Okay. So when I have to do some dish for the evening, I have to dig up my refrigerator to see what is inside. I don't know what's inside. But if I had a panel in front which said that you had so many cucumbers, so many tomatoes, potatoes, and you don't have onions, then I could decide what to buy and what to cook. So one, it helps me to understand the expiry dates, cook well ahead, so I save some money, save some food. On the other hand, it's a boon for retailers, because if I could pre-order, I don't fancy a customer walking into a retail shop just to buy milk. So milk, eggs, bread, you don't get a fantastic experience buying bread, right? So these are the mundane things which can be automated. I'm looking forward to see such technology available.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much, Rajesh. And as a thank you, as you know, me and Alex launching the book today at Seamless, Winning in the Platform Economy. So this is a copy for you. Please read it. It's actually not just about how the world is doing, winning in the game of Temu and all, but how the Middle East is also fighting it and staying in the race, and what everyone needs to do to survive and then potentially win in this platform economy game. So thank you so much for your time today, and I'll see you on stage.